Welcome to the Lou Cutino Show, where we can learn to reimagine our lifestyle.
Mr. Shiv Kera, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
You inspired me years ago, and then I stopped reading the book in between. And then I was on a Jet Airways flight, and you were in the magazine. Every flight I took, I would go through the pages, and there was your picture talking about your courses that made me start reading the book again as I continued to move out of a leadership role and into my own business. But it's a pleasure to have you here.
I'm grateful.
Inspiration, the impact that you've made over all through the world. I mean, everyone who's made anything out of their life or their business knows you. They quote, you know, what you keep saying about winners don't do different things, they do things differently. That's become like a tagline. Inspiring, it tells a story on its own. Our show is about reimagining lifestyle, wherever we are. Our lifestyle could be leadership, it could be health, it could be anything today. And I love that you're on the show because I'm seeking that one word, inspiration. As we speak today, we will have millions of people from across the world. Some of them would be our fourth stage cancer patients. Some of them would be marathon runners, fit people, business people, everywhere. And I want to teach people how to lose, how to get back what they've lost, which is the ability to empower themselves with inspiration. But before that, your story is inspiring, right from the coal mines to how you built what you have today. I would love for you to talk about that. Inspire us with your story from then to now.
Okay, I'll cut it short. Yeah, I come from a business family. We had coal mines. We had close to 1,000 people working. Now, I didn't create them. I inherited them. And the mines got nationalized, and I was married just 4 weeks then. And some family has had money, our family did not. My father had died when I was just about finishing college, and we were left with the liability and the assets were gone. And I remember a year later my daughter was born, and I sold some of the last piece of my mother's jewelry to get released from the hospital. I did not have 10 bucks to buy milk that night. I tried my hands on three businesses with no money, and I failed in all three. Finally, November 13, 1975, I left India. Went to Toronto initially, and we were sleeping on the floor, started life with a bucket in my hand, washing cars door to door for about a year and a half. I was washing cars on the street. And then, totally by accident, got into selling vacuum cleaners to supplement my money. And again, totally again by accident, I got into selling life insurance. But interestingly, Luke, within 90 days, my manager called me back to fire me for non-performance. So I told him, I said, look, I'm not that educated. I'm BCom, third division. I failed in my 10th. That's my academics. I'm not a doctor, engineer, attorney, accountant. How do you expect performance out of me? I got a handicap. Luke, I remember that day very well, about 47 years ago. He looked at me and said, you shut up and listen to me. And he shouted at me, you shut up and listen to me. And he says, you don't have a handicap, you have a bad attitude. And it is people like you who not only ruin their own lives, but they also ruin their family's life too. And he says, do you know who has a handicap in life? The doctor, engineer, attorney, accountant, they all have handicaps. I said, boy, never heard that one. How do they have handicaps? He said, go check out all over the world. It is generally true, exceptions different. They all have chosen, they feel they're stuck. They all have chosen their field and they are stuck. That is true generally, exceptions different. Now, right that evening, I had Dr. Norman Vincent Peale come into Toronto, and I went to attend his program and paid money, which I didn't have. But interestingly, that was one of the turning points in my life. And that day, Dr. Peale gave a prayer, which in my opinion is the crux of life, essence of life. And since the last 47 years, I've never left my home without the prayer. And it goes like this. But more important, I was so impressed by Dr. Peale. He was probably 85 at that time when he addressed. And when he came to the stage, there were probably about 1,000 people in the audience, and I was one of them. He looked at the audience and with so much confidence, but that confidence had humility. See, because I learned one thing, confidence without humility amounts to arrogance. And he looked at everybody And the way he spoke with the enthusiasm that he did at 85, and he was just about 4'11", not a tall guy, maybe with shoes 5. And the enthusiasm he had that day, I've changed the definition of height. You never measure a person's height neck down, always measure neck up. And that day he gave a prayer, which is called the Serenity Prayer. I'm sure you must have heard it. It says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, and courage to change the things that I can, and wisdom to know the difference what I can and what I cannot. And since the last 47 years, I've never left my home without the prayer. And if you dissect this little prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change. Now the question is, can we change everything in this world to suit ourselves? No. Can we manipulate and mold things to suit ourselves? Answer is no. There are many things beyond, such as, I didn't choose my parents, neither did you. I didn't decide where I was going to be born, and neither did you. And if this is my height and the color of my skin, there's nothing I can do about it. And granted, sometimes people are born deformed. What wrong did they do? Who knows? And sometimes bad things do happen to good people for no fault of their own. So what it says is, if I cannot change, let me accept it graciously, not grudgingly. Because many times in life, people keep fighting the things they just cannot change. And they bring stress into their lives, and they become paralyzed, and they become unproductive. So it says, if I cannot change, let me accept it graciously, not grudgingly. And if I can change, then give me the courage to do it, and wisdom to know the difference what I can and what I cannot. Now, when I wrote my book, You Can Achieve More, I took this thought few steps forward. And I wrote in my book that life is full of choices and life is full of compromises. Seems like a contradiction, but not really. See, how is life full of choices? Look at this. If I ill-treat you, I have chosen to be ill-treated, haven't I? If I treat you with discourtesy, I have chosen to be treated with discourtesy, haven't I? If I light up a cigarette, I've chosen to invite cancer, haven't I? And if I exercise every day, I've chosen to invite good health, haven't I? And if I eat too much every day, I've chosen to be obese, haven't I? Now look at this. If I drink and drive, I've chosen to invite an accident, haven't I? And if I tell lies, I've chosen to lose my credibility, haven't I? See, life is full of choices. Now the next sentence, Luke, is very important. We are all free to the point of choice. But after we make our choices, the choice controls the chooser. We have no more choice after that. It's all over.
So is that the reason why a lot of people don't like making choices?
Well, that's another reason why they don't make choices. You know why? Because they're fear of failure. Fear of failure. Yeah. That's an escapist behavior. And they shirk and they abstain from making decisions because they're scared. What if it goes wrong? So they don't take any decision. So when they don't take any decision and then things go wrong, you know what they say? What wrong did I do that I'm suffering? The wrong you did is you never did anything.
Yeah, you didn't make a choice.
See, many times in life, we are penalized not for our actions, but our inactions when we should have acted. And that is crucial. And keep in mind, indecision is also a decision. I decide not to decide. What a joke. It is, but that is true. But let me just close what I was mentioning to you. How is life full of choices and compromises? You see, as somebody said, well, in life, we cannot choose the cards that are dealt to us. What we can choose, how we play the game. And sometimes, nature gives us a lemon. The choice is ours. Do we cry or do we make lemonade? That's our choice. Now, sometimes, especially the press people, they ask me, Mr. Khera, people who are successful, don't they make mistakes? And people who fail, don't they do positive things in life? And my answer is that people who are successful, they do make mistakes. But remember, making a mistake once in a while does not bring failure. Repeating the same mistake again and again is what brings failure. And doing something positive once in a while does not bring success either. Repeating the same positive behavior again and again is what brings success. And what is success? Series of positive decisions in life is called success. And series of negative decisions in life is called failure. And that's about it. I love your book, Small Wins Every Day. If I have your permission, may I continue?
Absolutely, please.
We have a little quote which says, winners don't do different things, they do things
differently.
Differently. Yeah. And in your book, you have said, little things add up and create a big difference. So winners don't do different things, they do things differently. So many times people ask me, Mr. Khera, what do they do differently? Mm-hmm. And my answer is, winners form the habit of doing things losers don't like to do. And what are the things losers don't like to do? They're the same things winners don't like to do either, but they do it anyway. See, losers don't like to get up in the morning. Winners don't like to get up in the morning either, but they get up anyway. See, losers don't like to work hard. Winners don't like to work hard either, but they work hard anyway. See, I don't care how old we are. When we were growing up, our parents said one thing, form good habits and habits form characters. Because 90% of our behavior is habitual. We don't think, we just act. And if we have positive habits, we are a positive character. And if we have negative habits, we are a negative character. And good habits are hard to come by, but they're easy to live with. And bad habits come easy, but they're hard to live with. And before we got the habits got us. Wow. And that is the key. You see, you talk to small little things. Those small little things add up and they become huge and massive. We are all creatures of habits. Have you heard this little phrase? This guy is just lucky. Every time he touches dirt becomes gold. And this guy is just unlucky. Every time he touches gold becomes dirt. Now, if you analyze this little statement, the person we call lucky, this is true. Every time he touches dirt becomes gold. I would change the word luck. You notice one thing, analyze their life, analyze every transaction in their life, and you will find the positive behavior has become habitual. Every time they do it right, it happens right, the reflex are moving right. And same thing, we call the person we call unlucky, analyze their life, analyze every transaction in their life, and you will find the negative behavior has become habitual. Every time they do it wrong, it happens wrong, their reflexes are moving wrong. And they eventually break it or blame it to luck. Now, if you have, since you are into the physical help and mental health also, you see, when you learn martial art, these young kids get white belt, and then they get the yellow and the orange and green and brown gradually. 5 years later, they're practicing what? Block, punch, block, punch, block, punch, block, punch, block, punch. See, 5 years later after they get the black belt, they're still doing block, punch, or they learn the white belt. Why? Because the teacher wants to get the block and punch into reflex action. Why? Because the teacher realizes that if the student is ever in a street fight, if he has to think to block and punch, he'll get beaten up. A martial arts student never has to think to block and punch. Their reflexes move. See, which means if we have to think to do the right thing, we can never do it right. It must come automatic. See, you heard this little phrase, practice makes perfect? This is incorrect. Practice does not make perfect. Practice only makes permanent whatever you practice. Only perfect practice makes perfect. Some people keep practicing their mistakes and they become perfect in making mistakes. You know something, in our office, when we get people into an interview, we give them a little test for 3 lines to type a letter. And if there are mistakes, red line, What does it mean? Either spacing is not right or spelling check is not done. Mm-hmm. And you just ask them, what is this? Oh, spell check, I didn't do it. Normally I do it, but today I didn't. Mm. Tell me, are they telling the truth?
No.
If you do it all the time, why wouldn't you do it tonight?
Right.
You know, you should close the interview and don't hire them. Mm. Are they telling the truth? No. If you hire them, you are hiding trouble. Mm. That's all they do. You see, good quality behavior is a habit. Excellence is a habit. So is failure is a habit. Success is a habit too. There are some people, no matter what they do, they succeed all the time. It is your reflexes. It's the little things that make a world of a difference. See, many times people say, this is a little lie, when the big one comes, I'll tell the truth. You practice enough little lies in life, when the big one comes, what happens? You end up telling a big lie. And many times people say, there's a little thing, when the big one comes, I'll show courage. You practice cowardice, enough little things in life, when the big one comes, what happens? You end up being a big coward. Practice does not make perfect. Practice only makes permanent whatever we practice. And that is really the message that you are taking. It's the little things that make a big difference. You know, there's a little contradiction, Luke. It's the little things that make a big difference. It is a small hole that sinks a big ship. Look, if the little things that make a big difference, tell me, if they can make a big difference, how can they be little? What a contradiction. If they can make a big difference, how is it little? It's not. It is totally contrary. We need to understand exactly what the whole thing is all about.
And just to pull off from this point, the power of repetition comes in to the whole picture again, right? What we keep practicing, the whole connection with the subconscious mind, we get programmed, like, yeah, we know people who tell lies after a while, they believe it's their truth, because that's what the subconscious mind, that's how it's programmed, because you're so used to telling a lie. So when it comes to the power of repetition, why do people find it difficult to repeat the things? Like, we all brush our teeth every morning, and I've, in every stage I've spoken across the world, I try to ask people, can I motivate you to stop brushing your teeth? And they're like, absolutely not. It's in their mind, repetition again. Why aren't people able to, like when they know they need to look after their health, for example, or they know I need to behave in a particular way to get a promotion or for my business to succeed? Why do they lose the power of repetition with the good stuff? I love what you said about practice makes perfect. It doesn't, because you could be practicing the wrong things. Why is repetition of the good things so difficult?
Just want to make one point, and I'll add on to what you just said. You just said that people who keep telling lies, and after that they start believing that's the truth. No. They don't start believing the truth. They know it is still lies, but you know what has happened? They've destroyed their conscience, they don't feel guilty. You see, guilt is positive. Guilt is good. You know something, when I do something wrong, I feel guilty, it is a natural mechanism for me to stop. You see, people keep complaining, and many coaches say, no, guilt is bad. No, guilt is not bad. It is our nature's mechanism to say, stay on track when you go off track. Come back. See, that is the sad part. When their conscience doesn't stop them, it is not that they believe it is the truth. They still know it is lies. But that is the worst part. They destroyed their conscience.
So they don't know the difference anymore.
They still know the difference. But yeah. You know, they have conditioned themselves, and when that thing, guilt stops, then you go in the wrong direction, mm-hmm. and nothing to stop you. See, right now when I do something wrong, something stops me. Yeah. No, stop. So guilt is positive.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, attitude and action. Attitude. How do people fix that attitude? I mean, today we have patients, we know the difference between their life and death is their attitude, literally. How do we teach people, the youth, everyone around, when we know that attitude is our block to achieving anything, whether it's in a relationship, business, What are some of the steps that we can follow to start? Because I believe attitude is linked with ego and pride. And today when I look at, you know, all of our patients, all of our clients, the ones who have survived the most deadliest cancers and the ones who are succumbing under small lifestyle diseases, there is an attitude in between because you have great medicine, you have everything around, a great system. How do we start to change this attitude and why is it so difficult? I know it's conditioning from, you know, maybe the past and childhood and many different reasons, but where's the starting point? How can we move to action to start changing our attitude?
Let me come back to my own story when my manager called me to fire me. Mm-hmm. And after I attended Dr. Peel's program, I went back to my manager. And I said, Joe, don't fire me. Give me one more shot. Mm-hmm. One more shot. Because if you fire me today, I don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. And the only place I know where to go is to go back to washing cars. I don't want to do it anymore. And I have a little daughter. Mm-hmm. I make one commitment to you. I won't let you down because of my effort. He looked at me and he says, Shiv, that's not your small one, that's your big one. He said, I'll let you stay here only if you make a commitment, not to me, but to yourself. Mm-hmm. I'll let you stay. He would do the papers that day. And that year I went ahead, sold over $1 million. Next year, 3 million. Year after, 5 million. Moved on to the US, got into three businesses. I bought out a company out of California in 1984. And started the New Jersey operation with no clients, and I sold my company with close to 500 clients for a decent sum. Now, why do I share my life with you? Literally answering the thing that you just asked, the attitude part. See, I kept failing all my life and kept blaming the whole world for my failure, not realizing that I was my own biggest problem. Nothing changed outside. But something changed inside here, and the direction in my life changed. And I ask my audiences in my programs, aren't we our own biggest problem? We are our own problems. And then the second lesson I learned from my manager was, when he said to me, you shut up and listen to me. That day I learned one thing. Sometimes in life, you got to be unkind to be kind. Look, sometimes in life you got to be unkind to be kind. Look, I as a coach, I can't change anybody, nor can you change anybody, nor can anybody else change anyone. You see, everything is a pain and pleasure principle in life. Everything comes down to, I've written my book, You Can Win, everything comes down to pain and pleasure. Everything and anything we do in life, we do for two reasons. Either to gain a pleasure or to avoid a pain. Mm-hmm. Everything. Look at the people who smoke. They know it is bad. Their parents say it, kids say it, neighbors say it, wife says it, husband say it, doctor says it, the pack says it, and they cough every day themselves. They know it is bad. But you know what they say? They continue. Why? The answer is, I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. Pleasure is too great. So they continue. Till how long? Till one day they have a shooting pain in their body and they go to the doctor and the doctor checks out and says, buddy, you got cancer. And they stop right. And the doctor says, you want to say daylight tomorrow morning, you stop right now. And they stop. Why? Because now the pain is much more than the pleasure. See, earlier the pleasure was more than the pain. Now it is changed. So the guy quit, stop. See, they do it. Who changed? I didn't. They changed. Mm-hmm. I can't change anybody. See, people who do wrong, they tell lies. When it becomes painful to lose credibility, they change. So. See, when my ill health troubles me enough, I change. I go start doing exercise. Mm-hmm. See, it all comes down to pain and pleasure principles. You see, attitude is really our thinking process, how we go through life. It is our attitude. So, there was a study done, which is called the Marshmallow Study. I'm sure you must have found it. Four-year-old kids, they were surveyed and they were told that, look, if you leave this marshmallow and don't eat it in 10 minutes, And I'll give you two. Now, they were all being video recorded. Some people ate it. Some people went back. A four-year-old kid, temptation is right there. And they came back, brought here, came back, put it back, came back, put it back. You should see the expression of those. And then 33% people didn't have it. 66% ate it. And 14 years later, the same kids were surveyed again. Now, 4 years were 18-year-old kids. And they found that people who did not eat it, who resisted, they were more trustworthy, they were more confident, they had better scores in the schools, they had better relationship everywhere. And then they were again surveyed when they were 30, 12 years later, and they found they had better relationship, better families, they were doing well in their work everywhere, they were more trustworthy, more dependable. So what does it tell you? Four-year-old kid, what does it tell you? That 90% of our attitude is frozen by the age of four. And these kids who had delayed gratification, they understood the meaning of short-term pain is better than long-term, and it is better to take long-term gain. Better to take long-term gain and overlook the short-term pain. But there were others who wanted short-term gain and they were willing to suffer long-term pain. So we have to understand it is our attitude, it is our behavior, how we impact.
And choices again.
Choices, sir. Again. Yeah. It all comes down to life is full of choices and life is full of compromises. Same thing in relationships. Same thing in financial decisions. You know something, people who are messed up, they don't stay messed up in only one area. They get messed up in every area. Because, you know, that's habit. They will be messed up financially, messed up spiritually, they'll be messed up relation-wise. Everywhere they are messed up. So the same behavior continues this side. See, many times you hear people saying, I'm a different person at home and different person at work. Not true. Behaviors don't change. See, people who are honest at home are honest at work. People dishonest at home are dishonest at work. Behaviors don't change.
That's true. I've never seen it that way. That's very powerful. You talk about, in one of your videos, I was very impressed about your perception and your teachings on self-esteem. And I'll tell you why, because what really struck me, if we don't feel good ourselves, how else can we make a difference at work, relationships? We can fake it only to a certain point, maybe. I would love for you to talk about self-esteem, because I think that's a huge problem that also links people to vices, because then they have an identity, you know, or conformity with groups who smoke or do substances or, you know, the company that you keep. So how would you explain self-esteem to us, Shiv, and how can we take simple steps to kind of, you know, start the journey right now? Because I believe sometimes I may have self-esteem issues as well, because I don't feel good. Like, if something makes me feel bad, I can't be good to my patients. I can give them my technical knowledge, but I feel on those days I lack the passion and the empathy with them because I woke up not feeling good because of one or two particular reasons. How can we be more in control of this?
Okay. Look, I learned one thing while I was selling life insurance. Let me continue with that one. Yeah. And then I'll come to this self-esteem issue. You see, there I was on 100% commission. Mm-hmm. Selling life insurance, totally 100% commission. If I didn't sell, I had no money. I wouldn't get any money anyway. Mm-hmm. But I noticed when you talked of attitude, this is attitude. When I noticed in the company, there were some people who were getting salaries, but they were not doing the job. And that's the time I learned the difference between making money versus earning money. Making money is criminal. Earning money is spiritual. What's the difference? See, when you earn it, you put your energy and ethics behind it. Energy and
ethics
behind it. That's called earning. And sadly today, most people want to make money. Very few want to earn it. There was a survey that said almost 87% of people who go to work, they don't do their job. 87%. Is that not an integrity issue? It's a big time integrity issue. See, people have to understand that wages without work amounts to stealing. Again, it comes back to the foundational stuff, which is integrity and values and attitude. That's why our programs address attitude, leadership, motivation, and values. I repeat, attitude, leadership, motivation, and values. Think about it. How come under the same set of circumstances, some people break records while others break themselves? How come? Think about it. Now, let me come to this point on self-esteem. First of all, what is self-esteem? Self-esteem is the way we feel about ourselves. When we feel good one day, when we wake up in the morning feeling good, the world looks nice, productivity goes up, and relationships are a lot better, aren't they? And the reverse is true. And self-esteem is inversely related to egos. Have you seen people with egos like I know it all? What do? They talk down to people, don't they? They put down others, don't they? And every decision they make is more to satisfy ego than make sense. Now think about it. Look, why does a human being put down another human being? It is sadistic but true. There are some people in this world who feel good when the other person feels bad. They feel superior when the other person feels inferior, which means they don't want to lift themselves up, but they want to pull others down. Don't we see that every day in the real world? Okay. Now, this is one kind of ego. There's another kind of ego which says fragile ego. Anything you say, I take it personally, I get hurt. And we talk of team spirit. What do both these egos do to team spirit? They just destroy it. Absolutely, it's finished. Now, my new book, You Can Achieve More, which the first one, You Can Win, has a subtitle. Winners don't do different things, they do things differently. But the new one, which says You Can Achieve More, has a subtitle. If you want to stand out, you need to do something outstanding. Now, I'll come to the, what is the driver to self-esteem? What drives? You see, many times people say, I want to be happy, I want to be successful, I want to have great extraordinary income, and so on. I want to have extraordinary life, all this stuff. But they need to ask, are you an extraordinary person? Do you have extraordinary integrity in life? Are you willing to work extraordinarily hard in life? Do you have extraordinary commitments in life? Do you have extraordinary relationships in life? If you don't have any of these things extraordinary, you will get nothing in life, zero. And when people see a success story, you know what they say? Must be lucky.
Lucky. Yeah.
And must be at the right place at the right time. Now, this is an incomplete sentence, which I've mentioned in my book. You see, not only do you need to be the right person at the right place at the right time, but you need to be the right person at the right place at the right time. And that is not complete either. Not only do you need to be the right person at the right place at the right time, but you need to do the right thing at that time also. And if you don't do it right, you could still be the right person at the right place at the right time, get nothing in life. Now, let me share with you what is the driver to self-esteem. The driver to self-esteem is self-acceptance. What does self-acceptance say? Self-acceptance says, I accept myself the way I am, with my pluses and minuses. Now, it doesn't mean when a person says, I accept myself the way I am, it doesn't mean that's the way I am, that's the way I will be. That's arrogance. And it also doesn't say, take it or leave it. That's the way I am. That's arrogance. Self-acceptance says, I understand I'm not perfect. Okay? But I accept myself the way I am with my pluses and minuses. That doesn't mean I'm going to stay that way. It says, I made mistakes. I make mistakes. I apologize for my mistakes. I seek forgiveness for my mistakes. I'm not proud of my mistakes. I learn from my mistakes. I will not repeat my mistakes, but I am not a mistake.
Wow. That is so amazing.
I am not a mistake. Since I accept myself, it is the epitome of humility. I accept myself the way I am. I made mistakes. I make mistakes. I apologize. Seek forgiveness. I'm not proud of my mistakes. Learn from my mistakes. I will not repeat my mistakes. But I am not a mistake. I accept. This is the driving force to high self-esteem. It's not arrogance or ego. I'll share with you an example from Charlie Chaplin's life, from the memoir, Charlie Chaplin. Once he was passing through Europe, and he saw a big hoarding, Charlie Chaplin look-alike contest. So he decided to participate. And guess what? He lost.
Wow.
You see, he started thinking, the real one loses, the fake one wins. Then he started thinking, I know who I am. I'm the real Charlie Chaplin here. And he started thinking, should I tell them? Why don't I tell them that I am the real Charlie Chaplin here? Then he started thinking, why should I tell them? They're enjoying it. They're having fun. I know who I am. I know my identity. I repeat, I know my identity. I don't have to prove anything to anyone. I don't have to prove anything to anyone. And he walked away. Wow. Look at what self-acceptance is. When you know your identity, you are not fighting to create a false identity. See, when I put you down, I feel good. When you feel bad, what is it? My entity, I feel good. But people with high self-esteem, they don't have to do that. They know their identity. I don't have to prove anything. And you see, this is one more behavior. And low self-esteem is driven by self-doubt, inadequacy. And to cover that, they do all kinds of stuff. Appearances, looking for approval from others all over the world. They buy expensive cars to only get status. I mean, they're all kinds of stuff. You see, they keep looking at the kind of clothes you wear, the kind of car you have, the kind of jewelry you have, the kind of home you live. You know why? They look at your, they assess your self-worth by your net worth. They assess your self-worth by your net worth. They don't understand. People make things. Things don't make people. And many times, people with low self-esteem, to get a high. See, person with high self-esteem is on a high. He's at peace. But this guy, to get that high, they have escapist behavior. They become abusive, self-abusive. They become chain smokers, drug addicts, alcoholics. Now tell me, what is alcoholism and drug addiction? Is it not self-abuse? Now, if you respected yourself, would you abuse yourself?
Absolutely not.
No. Yes. It is 5,000% a self-esteem issue.
Wow. I'm seeing a lot of connection with one point which I had made my mind up to ask you when we planned this. Ego. Again, everything connects with the ego. The most difficult thing to handle. At the same time, it's the solution to so many problems in the world. So self-esteem, ego, attitude. What have been some of your ways to help people through this? You know, because you can tell people they have an ego. Most of them already know they have an ego. A lot of people say, oh, meditate and your ego will go away. Some people say different things. Everyone has their own opinion. With your years of experience and working with leaders across the world, with all of your books, today when you sit back, you know, what's your take on ego and how do we look at it? How do we look at starting to, you know, change our egos in order to serve us and the people around us? Because I do believe ego used the right way can be very, very powerful, but it can also be very, very destructive. So what's the fine line between this? And with all your experience today, enlighten us, please.
Well, I've heard many gurus and many people talk of meditation and do this and do that. And I respect that, let me tell you. Because, yeah. And I respect that because I've not done meditation. Let me put it this way to you. People look at me, say, oh, you must be meditating every day. I said, no, no, no. I sleep till 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
10:30, 11 o'clock. And I wake up after that. Yeah. After that, when you put me on, I can work all night without a break. I can work all night. But starting trouble, I can't get up in the morning. So some people have starting trouble, then I have stopping trouble. Then I can continue all the way. So my point I'm trying to make is, yes, I'm sure they all have some positives. At the same time, look, one has to come to terms with themselves. See, many people confuse pride with ego. See, pride is a positive word. I take pride in what I do. That's good. But ego is a negative term. Ego is people with strong egos. They are jealous in nature. They put down. They are selfish in nature. Self-centered people. Me, to hell with you. I mean, they always look. They will, people with high egos, low self-esteem, they will compromise values. They are neither good leaders nor good followers. Hear this. Look, they are neither good leaders nor good followers. You know why? You can't trust them. They will compromise values for ulterior motives. So if you compromise values for ulterior motives, can you trust anybody like that? No. So a person you can't trust, they are neither good leaders nor good followers. You need both. So it all comes down to self-esteem. Look at the example I just shared with you. These people with false egos, they make comparisons with others. How come they have this, I don't have it? How come they have this, I don't have it? How come they have this, I don't have it? Have you heard people talking like this? I never wear anything unless it is designer. Now what's wrong with designer? Nothing wrong with designer. I like it, love it, live it, enjoy it. But you see, to them, CK gives them identity. They're looking for identity. That's ego.
And low self-esteem.
And that is the key. To cover that low self-esteem, they go to any extent. They destroy people's lives again. And you see, people, look, you find, first of all, none of us is perfect. We all make mistakes.
Absolutely.
But you see, a person with high self-esteem, if you give them constructive criticism, they have no problem in saying, I'm sorry. They realize it, and they have no problem saying, I'm sorry. But people with low self-esteem, even if you give them constructive criticism, they have a very hard time saying sorry. You know why? It hurts their ego. Everything becomes a prestige issue. And you'll especially look at in today's day and age, there are many newer rich families. Now, what is wrong with new rich? Nothing wrong in being a new rich person. But new rich is not considered as a compliment. It is considered a derogatory. Means they made millions by hook or by crook. And the values don't exist. And somehow, their behavior says, look at me, I've arrived. Somehow, the behavior says, look at me, you can't ignore me anymore, I've arrived. So, this is called the attention-getting behavior. So, whether that new rich dad calls his son, who's 18 years old, son, my dad couldn't do it, I'm going to do it for you. I'm going to celebrate your 18th birthday with a 5-star cake and a 5-star hotel, and everybody in town who means anything, whether I know them or not, they'll be there. And the day comes, he cuts the cake, and he gives his punk. Punk is the kid. That is it. He is a punk. And he gives his punk the keys to the car and says, son, take this, go terrorize the town. Go terrorize the town, and here's a mobile. In case you run into any trouble, call daddy. Daddy knows everybody, and if he doesn't know everybody, he has enough money to buy everybody. Go terrorize the town. And haven't you seen young punks driving
absolutely
like that?
Yeah.
Isn't that reality? This is reality. You see, you got money, but values don't exist. You know, this is really what one needs today. And sadly, even within India also, a lot of emphasis has been on skill development. Skill development. My question is, you can develop all skill you want. Mm-hmm. You can have skillful engineers, skillful doctors, skillful judges, skillful lawyers. But if the character is missing, they will be criminals.
Yeah.
They will be criminal attorneys, criminal judges, criminal lawyers, criminal police guys. They are mafia themselves. You know what? Nations are not built on skills. Nations are built on character.
Character, which is people again.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I love what you say about people don't have business problems, they have people problems. I just love that statement. It's so profound and powerful. So again, for the ego, we have to start looking within. We need to start making those changes and choices. So again, choices will impact ego. Choices will impact decisions and all of that. No, you are right. Sometimes we get certain patients and the first 30 minutes of the consult, they have a serious disease. They're only talking about who they know, who they're connected with. And right then we realize the disease is not our problem right now, but it's the attitude. Because how are we going to break through so many, you know, levels of their healing and their medicine and their nutrition when the attitude is wrong? And I mean, that's just how it is right now. Why don't they teach these things in schools? Why don't they teach these things like money? I know it's the why, we all know why, but you know, I think that, you know, students and children should learn. Health is one, we're trying to get it into schools, but even attitude, because it starts, we depend on parents to teach attitude, but then a bigger system of the schools and societies and communities. You should start something, sir. For schools, for children, a whole series on that, because I believe they should start off young. Like you said, we have so many people who have passed out from the best universities in the world, the best skill sets, but they fail at every aspect of their life because of attitude, because of ego.
Look, we've been doing leadership training for many years for Fortune 100 companies like Lufthansa and all. And when we do training now, I tell people that, look, what I am doing in your company here is repair work. I'm repairing. Now, if you prepare them, you won't have to repair them. Where do you prepare them? You prepare them in schools and colleges, and sadly they're not. And I had the dean of James Cook University from Australia go through a program, and this is just pre-pandemic, but we haven't been able to take off because of the three-year period in between. But he said, Mr. Khera, I've been in academics for the past 35 years. We need your program, and we're looking now to set up the Center of Leadership Excellence for them in Singapore campus. And not only that, but within India, the IIM Nagpur has come forward, and starting 2 weeks from now, we're starting out a program at IIM Nagpur for 250 MBA students. Again, the title of the program is called Prepare Them, Don't Repair Them. Prepare Them, Don't Repair Them. And that is the title of the whole thing. And our whole objective is to create a factory of leaders, good leaders, factory of good leaders. Because I learned one thing, there is no such thing known as a neutral leader. Either they're good leaders or they're bad leaders. And good leaders actively guide, bad leaders actively misguide. And good leaders look to create more leaders. And bad leaders look to create followers. You know why? They are so insecure. So that is really what our whole objective is. But somewhere at the larger peripheral, and the people, the government, education department, somewhere they have to get together and start spreading this message all the way.
Are you a spiritual person?
I don't know how you call spiritual. And let me share with you, because I addressed close to 1,000 cardiologists from all over the world. They asked me to keynote. So, and the topic was spirituality and science. So I said, these are all scientists, and I'm not a spiritual guy with those robes and all. So I did a little research. How do you address 1,000 cardiologists from all over the world? So I did a little research, and I saw the dictionary meaning of spirit, as spiritual. Anything that lifts your spirit,
exactly, yeah,
is spiritual. And it reminded me of something that today's parents and teachers tell the kids.
Do what feels good. Do what feels good. Do what feels good. Do what feels good. Feel good is the part that you're looking for, feeling good. Do what feels good. But I disagree with that. I come from the old school. Our old school said, feeling good is a natural outcome of doing good. And doing good is a natural outcome of being good. If you are good, you do good. You do good, you feel good. How can you feel good and you don't do good? The question is there something called good and bad? Answer is yes. Unlike people who say everything is subjective, absolutely incorrect. They have no values whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So in our program, we talk of universal values and eternal values. And there are something like that.
Wow. If you had the attention of the world on you for the next 2 to 3 minutes, 5 minutes, what would you tell the world today, given the fact that there's good, there's a lot of good, there's beauty, there's also evil, there's also like the pulling down of one another? I mean, we're living in a world where we have more comfort, wealth is upcoming, more knowledge, more AI, but it doesn't match the statistics of depression and suicides, unhappiness, broken relationships. I'm sure you have seen this from the top, you know. What's going wrong, and what do you think the fix is? If you had the attention of everyone on you right now, what would your advice be?
Well, my observation would be, one is, today the world has changed very drastically. Me is all what people are looking for. Me, mine. And second thing is that today's generation is very good with technology. Excellent. They could spend hours and hours in front of the machine. That's the positive side. But the flip side is they're very uncomfortable with people. They have become very uncomfortable with people. And my only contention is that with the speed of change, the way things are happening today, products are getting obsolete the day they're getting launched. And knowledge is getting obsolete within 2 to 3 years. See, look at engineering graduates. By the time they get to the fourth year, what they learned the first year became obsolete. Medical graduates. By the time they get to the fourth and the fifth year, what they learned the first year became obsolete. So with this kind of a scenario, either we are in deep trouble, or there's a great opportunity for those who are prepared. Now the question is, how do you prepare for the unknown? How do you prepare for the unknown? So it has literally become a cliche, the only constant is change. So I wrote an article, I'd send you a copy, which was published in the largest Asia magazine of HR. I wrote in that, is there anything else in this world that is constant? If there is, why not master the constants? And I wrote in that going into the future, the only people who will succeed in life are those who master three skills. They have never changed, they will never change. And they are what? One, people skills. Two, persuasion skills. Three, prioritizing skills. I'll quickly share with you why people skills. Go check out all over the world. We don't have business problems, we have people problems. And when we take care of our people problems, most of our business problems are automatically resolved. Two, all through history, our parents, their parents, their parents, we are hired for our skills, but we are fired for our behavior. Three, you notice the lower a person is in life, 90% of the time goes in technical skills, less than 10% people skills. And higher you go up, guess what happens? Just reverses. See, it means technology and technicians you can always buy with money. But the wealthiest person in the world must build and create relationships. In crude language, somebody said, you can buy a dog, but you cannot make them wag their tail. And I could go on, but this is people skills. Two, persuasion skills. Persuasion means what? Ability to influence, ability to convince, ability to negotiate, ability to sell. That's called persuasion. Four things. Influence, negotiate, sell, convince. Sometimes people say, I don't need it. I'm into operations, I'm into IT, I'm into finance. They are demonstrating basic ignorance. How come they don't need it? They don't understand. A candidate at a job interview, what's he doing? Selling. For he needs what? Persuasion skills. Mm-hmm. A boy, girl proposing to get married, what are they doing? Persuading each other to get married. A politician giving speeches to get votes, what's he doing? Persuading to get votes.
And we have a book called You Can Sell with a subtitle, In Life, Results Are Rewarded, Efforts Are Not. Which means we judge ourselves by our intentions, but the world judges us by our actions. And lastly, prioritizing skills. Look at this. The amount of time-saving devices we have today, we've never had that many in history. And yet, we don't have what?
Time.
We don't have time. You know why we don't have time? Because somewhere, we messed up our priorities. And I'm not lecturing. I'm guilty myself. We mess up our priorities. And when we mess up our priorities, we forget to distinguish between what's urgent in life and what's important in life. Urgent may or may not be important, and important may or may not be urgent. But the interesting thing is, whenever we ignore what is important, it always converts into urgent. Look at this. Health is important, but it's not urgent. Exercising every day is important, but it's not urgent. If I have a crucial meeting tonight, I cannot exercise. It's not the end of the world. But if I ignore my health long enough, guess what happens? I'll end up in the hospital. You ignore what is important, it converts into urgent. See, in life, relationships are important, but they're not urgent. But if you ignore relationship long enough, guess what happens? You start talking through your lawyers. See, what this pandemic has done, till now, we were all in the fast lane. You ask people, why do you go to work? I go to work for my family. Why do you work hard? I work hard for my family. Who are the most important people in life? My family. Who are the most neglected? Also my family. What a joke. But interestingly, what the pandemic has done, till now, we were all on the fast lane, running. We had no time. Nobody had time. But now, people have stepped back. And they say, wait a minute. I'm running all right. Let me see, am I running in the right direction? So what is the moral of this little story? Remember, in life, direction is much more important than speed. And two, all progress is change, but all change is not progress.
I could go on talking to you for hours, but it's amazing. Your book inspired me years ago, and I'm going to read the new book. Thank you so much for that copy. And Mr. Schiff, thank you so much for impacting this audience. I think from the time we've started till now, I need to play it back a couple of times and make my notes because I was so into it. But this is amazing, and thank you so much. I'm still going to ask you one last question.
Yes, sir.
You've grown from, we heard your story. You told us your story, how you've grown. You've created an empire. You've created impact with your empire. Along your journey, I'm sure there's been negativity. You know, the same thing that you spoke about, maybe people pulling you down, vice versa. How did you handle it? And does it still happen at the level that you are? And how do you handle it if it does?
It reminds me of a little quote. The film heroes leave impressions. Good leaders leave impacts. I repeat, film heroes leave impressions. Good leaders leave impact. There is impact. And that is the most important thing. That you make a difference, if you can make a contribution, I think that's what it's all about, life. And all I can say is, what drives me, if you go on my website, there are people who have sent letters from Singapore, Australia, how they were planning to commit suicide, how a person was in jail for 10 years, how he came out, started his own business, and how these are all on. There's a guy from Singapore, Anil David, Nikita Kaur in Australia. There are quite a few people. But that is what keeps me going. That's what, otherwise I would retire a long time ago. So it is really that little impact that a person can make, which is what is gratifying at the end of the day. And if we're not able to do that, then I think we've just lived the life of a cockroach. One more cockroach came and one more cockroach left. So in my book, You Can Achieve More, I've written close that the book with that winners make the days count, losers count the days. And that is the key.
So even if there's negativity in your life, you're just focused on doing what you need to do. That's it.
That doesn't mean that we don't get demotivated.
Of course, we
all
feel
get
it.
Demotivated.
Yeah.
But you got to pick yourself up.
And move on.
You see, keep in mind the question that you asked on self-esteem. Self-esteem is not a straight line. It's a yo-yo. See, when we have a breakdown in relationship, husband, wife, brother, sister, somewhere, or even employer, employee, you see, people who get separated, divorced, they feel rejected. They feel unwanted. Self-esteem goes down. See, but your foundation is strong, you come back. So that is, it's a yo-yo. So that's really what we want to build, is a strong foundation.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Stay tuned for more. We're going to continue our journey, learning, sharing, and evolving.